Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. Hi, everybody. Jason Klom here, your host for Comedy on Vinyl. The year is 1977. The album is Let's Get Small. The artist is Steve Martin. What you're about to hear is an older Comedy on Vinyl episode. I wanted to expose the people here at WLOR.net to some of the older episodes. This is from September 9th, 2011, with my guests Jeremy Guskin and Mike Priester. Mike is a TV writer. Jeremy is an actor. I think you'll enjoy this episode. It's the first time we discussed the album. We've discussed it a number of times since. It's one of my favorites. This is an early episode, so it's not like the format that we do now. I'm a little bit more raw as an interviewer, but it's a lot of fun. I hope you enjoy it. And as usual, you know, check us out on comedyonvinyl.com. Thanks so much for listening. Welcome to Comedy on Vinyl. This week we're discussing Steve Martin, Let's Get Small. With me, as semi-usual now, is Mike Priester.
Hello, hello.
And Jeremy Guskin.
Howdy out there.
Alrighty, so yeah, let's talk about one of my absolute favorite albums of all time. I've heard this one!
Yay!
A frame of reference, ladies and gentlemen.
Now, Steve Martin, as I understand it, was a regular cast member on Saturday Night
Live.
He absolutely was. He did the Dark Side with Nat X, right. For those of you who don't know, that
and
was
he,
his.
He actually founded the Groundlings.
And he did that.
Yes.
Oh dear!
See, I thought I understood.
Yes.
See, get it. See what I'm doing here is I'm playing a little game with everyone. I first heard it because it was in my parents' collection, and they made me listen to it, and that was fine. That was a good thing because it was the first real absurd thing I got to listen to. I probably heard this before I ever saw Monty Python. Actually,
really,
I saw a lot of things out of order. So,
oh wow,
yeah, I probably heard this before I saw any Monty Python. And this is what year is this one? Is it?
Oh.
I'm
guessing 78?
Yeah, I thought
it was
like 77 or 78, if I recall.
77.
77,
right.
There it is.
Star Trek. Star Wars. God damn it! Did I say Star Trek? I'm sorry, I apologize.
Nerd alert.
I know. Anyway, I don't know how this relates to Star Wars.
Except they came out the same year.
Yeah, that's all I got. That is all I got.
I think that's all there is,
yeah,
actually.
Which
is
right.
A little weird to mm-hmm. think about in some ways, too. But,
mm-hmm.
well, I guess maybe not as much. Maybe those old Star Wars don't seem so cool to anybody besides us old people anymore.
Maybe.
Anyway, so.
I know they don't to the students.
Actually, I don't think they exist because the old Star Wars are now new and have different things and wampas running around.
Darth Vader yelling.
Yes, and Jabba the Hutt in the first movie.
Yes.
Just there.
It's, what a great scene, isn't it?
It's
great.
Really
so
it's even. It's
so
even,
glad they added that.
It's even mm-hmm. better when Han Solo digitally walks over
his
digitally tail. I have to tell
hilarious.
You that it never looks weird.
Nope.
And it's always funny.
Oh,
and enhances the narrative.
Oh, it's the biggest laugh moment in the film.
I agree.
You know, and how about you guys? First time you heard it?
Well, the first time I saw Steve Martin in Star Wars was a revelation.
He was C-3PO, right?
No, it's actually funny you should mention that because I'm kind of the opposite on this one. I came to this a little bit later. I remember seeing some stuff, some of his stand-up and just clips and then going back to have to watch it. And
right.
I remember listening to this album a little bit after the fact. And I think this was... I came to this one after I saw Bill Cosby himself and a couple
uh-huh.
of the other classics. And this was, again, one of those revelations. Like, really? This can be stand-up comedy too?
Yeah.
Well, this is awesome!
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In fact, this is more awesome than the stuff I've been listening to.
Right, right.
This should all be like this. And then, of course, if it was all like this, it would be...
Not absurd.
Well,
yeah.
not even that. It would be a debacle.
Right.
That's really
what right.
it would
be. So true.
I am such an old man that I was in high school.
Uh-huh.
And somebody, I can't remember, although I do remember Bill Hazel, a friend of mine, said, somebody said, do you mind if I smoke? And he goes, no, do you mind if I fart? And I laughed. I went, oh, that's pretty funny. He goes, oh, that's Steve Martin. I said, ooh.
Uh-huh.
Because, oh, you have to hear this. And we either they had it or we went out and bought it like within minutes and I just sat there listening to this, you know, album probably over and over again because it was the same realization I think that you guys had that there was this absurdness about him that, again, I had never heard before. I'm sure they were out there.
Sure.
I'm sure there were people doing it, but he was the one who brought it to the mainstream.
Yeah.
And it was so... And the thing... You know what? I think maybe... he had already been on Saturday Night Live at that time. Is it possible when this came out?
Yeah, he was. I think he was on the first. I guess
because
seasons.
I remember my friend Bill also like kind of demonstrating what he was doing when he said, "Let's get small."
Oh, so he's like actually he doing
put his
bit.
Hands up in
See,
the
that's
air.
That's so
and stuff.
Nice. That's
yeah, awesome. Yeah, to have a little bit of a visual. To know,
I'm serious.
Because if you're listening, to just let's. I'm going to get small. You know, and people do. You have no clue. You hear the audience laughing, yeah. but when you see him,
right.
doing the bit, and my friend was telling me that he does this with the, like he pretends like he's holding a steering wheel, you know, a big awesome. Giant steering
right,
wheel.
Right, or it's that, I think that the first time I ever saw somebody do that was George Carlin's bit when he went driving, I think it was Carlin on campus, when he had things he hates when he's driving, it was any 4 foot woman in a Cadillac, and he did basically the right, same move, right. and it was just the, you just see funny. Knuckles, you know, like that's yeah. it, floating on the steering wheel, that's it, and he did the, yeah, and I remember just how funny a visual that was, but.
Yeah, I've never seen any of this visually, which is too bad.
Did you do a search?
I didn't do a heavy search.
A YouTube search because I thought
I probably should have.
How about there's some of this on here? I was thinking I should have done a little look around to see what they had because I think a lot of this was on, you know, Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
We would do it at different points and stuff. So
it's weird that a guy can do a whole album again. I think it's well crafted. As like as much as it sounds, he's so good at making it sound like he's pulling the whole thing out of his ass.
But
that you can do an album and like half of it he's still playing that character of I'm famous, you're paying to see me, isn't that funny? Yeah. You know, that's so much of it, but it doesn't come across as crass. Like it's not a he originated I don't know, no, people can do that character now and it's not funny anymore.
Well, I mean, it's just I think there's kind of you know, it's hard when you are good and you can make a reference to it. You know, like, it's all right, because Steve Martin, even back then,
yeah.
you know, like, he wasn't throwing it in your face. He was like, I'm a big movie star. And,
right.
I mean, like, he was full aware. He's from Los Angeles. He knows that
yeah.
they're always going to be bigger stars than
of
him.
Course.
So it's always a little tongue-in-cheek, which is why he's able to get away with it so well. You know, and again, you know, when you see later people start to do it, it just comes across as just sort of smug and mean.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
And like, he never came across as smug or mean. It
no.
was always like, you could laugh along with him. Even when he was hosting the Academy Awards.
Uh-huh.
You know, when he's making fun of those people, it's like, you know, everyone at home is thinking the same thing. We're all gay. You know what I mean? And like, and he drops it. And again, I think this, and I hate to harp on, you know, the same stuff over and over again, but it's probably because all of these genius guys have the same stuff in common. But it was like when I was talking about the Richard Pryor thing, he almost transcends the stand-up comedy on stage and is just a great comedic actor.
Right.
Sure.
Because again, all these bits are immaculately crafted and it still looks like he's pulling it out of his ass.
Yep.
Even when he does that, the holiday wish monologue.
Right.
I had one wish for this holiday
right.
season,
right.
and it starts out just so wonderful
yeah.
and heartwarming.
Yeah.
And you know it's Steve Martin, and you know it's not going to stay there.
Yeah.
But he plays it so well. You're just like, yes, I'm at the hearth, and I'm listening to him speak. And please, you know, be wistful, Steve. It's even when he sings the song at the end.
Oh yeah.
You know, and the first verse is absolutely wonderful, and you could think his grandmother made this up, and then you realize it's the early mid 70s,
mm-hmm. yep.
and
yep.
And that's not going to stay that way.
Hey, mind if I smoke? I say, oh no, do you mind if I fart? It's one of my habits. Yeah, they got a special section for me on airplanes now.
Think, and again, talk about, you know, where bits go to. I have this picture in my head of Michael Scott on The Office dropping an excuse me on somebody and just, you know,
yeah.
turn a punch bowl. You
there,
know,
there
it's
you go.
Like, what? You know, people just like, really? You know, although I know they, I think somebody made fun of them doing, oh no, or it was the British one when they were doing Was Up and stuff.
Oh, yeah, they're doing
and
a horrible
Tim
was
like
up
goes, oh, really? 8 years ago, you still doing
yeah.
that one, huh?
That's it. You gotta love it. White people doing
yes.
outdated
yeah.
'90s slang.
Yeah.
Oh God. I didn't. On a side note, I didn't realize his hair was still dark at this point, unless he was.
Well,
oh yeah,
he went
yeah.
gray quick.
He turned silver. My guess is that's a dye job because I think it was pretty early on. He was
yeah.
he was going yeah the,
yeah.
the whole silver thing going and all too. So
yeah. I've seen footage of him on the Smothers Brothers, and his hair is still dark. But again, maybe it was dyed then too.
I don't know. Exactly. I mean, again,
he was young then too. So I mean, it happened early.
Yeah, and I mean, let's be honest, Hollywood magic. I believe George Burns died with a full head of hair. If you'd like to actually believe that, sure.
that's true.
You can go ahead and believe that if you like.
That's very true.
But no, I think. And another thing I love about this album is, you can totally see the jerk throughout the entire thing.
Yeah.
And I love that because so many comedians turn their material into something, into a TV show, into a movie, into whatever it is, and oftentimes it will work, and even more times it will not. But to have so many great little iconic lines in this album literally jump right into the movie. And
I was born a poor black child.
And there it is. And, literally, there it is.
Fucking
line. It's,
I think I'd seen The Jerk before I'd ever heard this, so I was like, oh, I get what that's going to become.
Yeah, I think I did, too. I think I saw it out of sequence in that way, too.
Well, he, you know, there's the bit in The Jerk, the cat juggling, you know?
With him playing the South American juggler. Right. I just love that bad mustache.
And, you know, it's like cats have a theme sometimes every now and then.
Oh,
did,
sure.
Did he do the cat polisher? Is that the...
An electric dog polisher.
Electric dog polisher.
I think that's
electric
dog polisher.
Okay, but he talked about giving his cat a bath, was it?
Right, giving the cat a bath,
seems like one of his pets of choice or whatever that he likes to incorporate as well.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love about him is that, you know, he can talk about political stuff, and it's in no way political.
Right.
You know, he doesn't want to associate with any of that crap. He'll bring up Nixon and has no position. It's just like, you know what? Nixon came out with a banjo and just like, you know what, guys? Everything's okay. And you're like, you know what? That would have done it for him. And I love that because it doesn't matter what side he's on. It's just a great little stupid, weird observation.
Yeah.
That's it.
And listening to this whole thing, it's just so it's in no way a surprise that he picked comedy, but the fact that he can do so many goddamn things so well, because he is a great banjo player, and that does help carry it. He's just an entertainer. He's a pure entertainer.
That's a great word to use.
You know, there's a lot of Marx Brothers humor in there too.
Oh,
there's
absolutely.
A lot of, I mean, like it's everything that ever influenced him is in there. I think the only thing we're missing is the magic, because he was a big magic guy too.
Right.
Well,
you can see on the cover.
Well, it's not even that, you can hear him blowing up a balloon animal. That balloon at one point.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
You know, you hear him doing some bad tap dancing at another point. You know, he does all of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, he has this reputation as kind of being a smart guy and a worldly man, too.
He is.
You know, and, you know, playwright. And, you know, sometimes for me, some of those things don't work. You know, you know, I mean, I'm a huge Steve Martin fan.
Me too, but.
You know, but, and there's movies that I just, are absolutely enamored with The Jerk, and Roxanne is, like, really one of my all-time favorite movies as well.
And brilliant because he's so smart.
Yeah,
you know, like, to take Cyrano de Bergerac and up there is a ballsy thing anyway, but then to make it actually fucking work
on
top of it.
And then I remember seeing some interviews with him at the time, and he was taking around saying, I want to do an updated version of Cyrano, and people are like, what? What do you mean?
Who?
And, like, it was, like, the first guy who kind of got it was the one who bought it and stuff.
Right.
But then there's this times where there's this Steve Martin who does kind of like I don't know, it just doesn't hit me at all, you know, I mean, you know, even as an actor and stuff too, you know, I mean, he's always Steve Martin,
you know,
he's not making any stretches or anything, but I think he does understand like what a good script is, and you know, he knows, you know, when a movie's, you know, going to be good and all. You know, it's interesting some of the takes he took. You know, the Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, which
I love.
Well,
it's not a great movie, but again, you know, for trying something, because again,
for its day,
no one would even attempt to make this movie.
Exactly. I think you had to be Steve Martin in Hollywood, and was it Carl Reiner?
Oh, yeah.
I think Carl Reiner directed and stuff, too.
Well, he also
because nobody would want to try it. And also, it's not like, you know, now with digital, you know, it's so much easier to do the things that they want to do, that they really busted their ass hard
to match,
to integrate things and match scenes and make, you know, dialogue go with each other and stuff too. And movies, half the movies I had never seen, you know, obviously at the time, you know, and since, although one thing it did make me want to go out and see those movies, you know, it was there, but, you know, it's interesting to see him, like, he's so funny on this album. And, you know, and there are movies where he's funny, but he is presentational. There's not a real subtlety, although I see these interviews with them. There was some kind of a special I remember once where they just kind of followed him around with a camera. Do you remember ever seeing this thing? Where,
no.
And he's so hilarious in his everyday life because he's just walking around. He has a comment, and he's so fast and sees this and says something.
Blows my mind.
And I just laugh my ass off all the time. And I kind of wish I could get that subtle Steve Martin, too, to really kind of... I have this feeling in front of a camera, he feels like he has to push out there and stuff or something to be... You know, he doesn't want to be uninteresting. But to me, he's such an interesting person.
I know.
And so hilarious. I would watch it.
Yeah.
You know?
I, to be honest with you, I hadn't even really thought of that. But I think you're absolutely correct. And and it just sort of popped into my head... I believe maybe he's aware of that now as he's getting older. Because when I watch interviews with him on The Daily Show or whatever it is, when he was talking about his band and the music album and everything else, you can almost see that he's making that concerted effort to not be the wild and
right,
crazy guy anymore.
Right,
and he is being much more demure,
right.
You know, and being the older statesman. And and I still think he's got that sort of manic... You know, like gasoline-powered turtleneck sweater in him.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's always ready to go with it. But, you know, again, you know, as you get older and sensibilities change, you know, he does write more, you know, just straight up, you know, dramatic fiction as opposed to the comedic fiction.
Sure.
Even his last autobiography, it's not as anecdotal and sort of off the wall as you think his...
Which was the most recent one? Is that Born Standing Up or Born Standing Up?
Born Standing Up.
Okay.
That was, yeah.
I haven't read that.
And a great read, you know, and I really like his stuff, but it is very, very different.
Did you guys see Picasso...
At the La Panagio?
Yeah. Interesting. I thought it was interesting, but that's where it stopped for me.
And that's just it. And like for me, it's the type of play that if it wasn't Steve Martin's name on it, it probably would not have gotten produced, let alone the amount of
publicity.
Yeah, and just, you know, the amount of people lined up to be in it and come see it. But again, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing because I think he's a great writer and he gets better and better and better.
One of the funny things I thought I read online was that, you know, at his first play reading at his house, Tom Hanks did... Picasso and Chris Sarandon did Einstein. You know, I go, that was your reading. I was sitting around the house.
You know, it's like talking to Jerry Stiller about, you know, I was trying to talk to him about House of Blue Leaves just as a play. And he was mentioning the first time that they had read it when John came over to the house. And I'm like, you mean John Guare? Oh, he just came over to read it. How quaint. It's like my house. Oh, how funny. When you're doing that. I mean, I don't even know if that would be a good cast, you know.
Yeah.
Would he be a good Picasso?
Right.
I don't know. But, you know, exactly.
Yeah.
But I like the play and I do enjoy his writing. But it's just so interesting how different it is.
This guy is good. I'm a rambling guy. Well, I'm rambling, rambling round. I'm a rambling guy. I ramble out to different times, go in a car, get a hotel. Oh, yes, 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 oh, no. A rambling guy, hey, R-A-M-B-L-I-N, apostrophe, or rambling. Okay, everybody.
I wonder what, again, I couldn't find a lot of details about, like, the genesis of this actual album besides the basic details of where it was recorded and that kind of, because I would like to know, you know, what bits were developed over years and years and what was fresh
and from where, what type of performance he was doing at the time.
Right.
He was not a straight stand-up.
He'd been writing full-time for years and years at this point too.
Yeah.
You know, it's surprising. You know, I mean, for as good and as funny a performer he is, you know, you sit there and go, wow, you know, this guy was sitting in a writing room. You know, that was a blast.
Right.
You know, in all those rooms and all, but.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty good documentary called Smothered about the Smothers Brothers. It's pretty good. And there's a clip from an Aspen Comedy Festival where they're doing a tribute to the Smothers Brothers. And he talked about getting a start on the Smothers Brothers show and how Mason Williams was paying him out of pocket for his first, like, months. Like, he had no idea, but Mason Williams was just cutting a check.
That's amazing.
Week. Yeah, and so, like... So thank you, Mason Williams, because if it wasn't for the guy who wrote Classical Gas, we wouldn't have the guy who played Foggy Mountain Breakdown so well. You know.
Hey, next, we'll play Foggy Mountain.
Yeah, he's, and again, it's so interesting that we've come back to one of these again after last week, is because here's another incredibly important, groundbreaking comedian who almost everybody born in the last 20 years doesn't even know does stand-up comedy.
Nope, they see him as remaking a bunch of old films that he shouldn't be doing.
And yeah, that's
it. Do you think there's a stand-up Hall of Fame somewhere? Somebody must have that, right?
Really?
Well, I think somebody's probably had that idea. You know, the problem that you run into is once those guys get to be of age, usually at that point you don't really want to hear from them anymore.
Yeah.
You want to hear from when they were 20 or 30
years
old. Ryan
Reynolds was great when he was young. nice shoes.
Right. We want Bob Hope now. You know?
Nowadays, I don't think he would do well at all. not nearly as well, I don't think.
But you know, it's Carlin's gone. You know, Pryor's gone. God. You know, Steve Martin.
How about this? Yeah. I'll tell you guys this. If there isn't the stand-up Hall of Fame, I propose that somebody out there build one.
Yes.
And as they're building it, we should go heckle.
Yeah.
You call that a support strut?
Actual construction.
That's what I meant. You know,
while they're building it.
Yeah.
And to the construction.
Let's go.
Oh,
deeper
nice
the
sexual harassment.
Exactly. Nice rebar, faggot. You know, like that. I think Steve would come along and join us.
It's such a ludicrous idea. It'd almost be funny to kind of incorporate somewhere to just make it be like ridiculously political to get in too. Mm-hmm. Only a certain number of Americans are allowed. We have to get Portuguese. We have to get Chinese stand-ups. Mm-hmm. We're going to be universal here.
But you couldn't call it the Stand-Up Comedy Hall of Fame. You'd have to call it, like, Captain Sammy's Chuckle Pit. You know, you really couldn't call it anything good.
To be honest with you, I don't think anybody wants to be inducted into Captain Sammy's Chuckle Pit.
Come on.
That sounds like something that has snakes and scorpions in it.
Ah, Christ.
But the reason I bring up the Hall of Fame is Steve Martin's in there for
of
me.
Of course
you know?
He is, yeah.
It would have to be.
Know.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that there's not much more stand-up than this, and is it Comedy Not Pretty? There are a couple others. You know, he didn't put out like a bunch of comedy albums per se.
No, most of his great comedy stuff is limited to like Saturday Night Live, movies.
Yeah.
And then
he ended up, you know, a movie star. You know, I mean, he did the things that we talked about. Pryor had a lot more trouble at doing, and that was turning into a full-fledged movie star and getting movies made, and then eventually like being able to kind of experiment and do movies that were off the beaten track, you know, off the path, I should say.
Yeah, absolutely. Like The Spanish Prisoner.
Yeah,
A good movie. Which I thought he did a pretty good job in. Again, I never, ever would have thought in a million years to cast him as that role. Never. Right. Because for me, again, being a fan, you look at Steve Martin and you go, he's not fucking tell the truth.
Right.
There's something he's lying about. Right. But David Mamet made it work, so good for him. There's also like other movies where he shows up, you know, like Grand Canyon, where I think he does a really nice sort of, you know, he plays a great, really well fleshed out character, and it has some comedic moments in it, but I think it's essentially a serious character.
I'm such a huge Steve Martin fan, and I, in general, love Ron Howard movies. Parenthood for me was not like a movie I really kind of got into that much. I liked it at best, but a huge commercial success.
I loved it.
Huge commercial success. And for some reason, I can't remember. It might have been that it was too good that I hated Tom Hulce's character so much.
Right.
That I was more irritated with him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
What a great little thing to get locked in on.
I spread it to the whole movie.
Yeah, he's awful in that. He's so good. But Robards as the dad is so good.
I mean,
and Diane Weist
is
fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
And Martha Plimpton. I mean, really is a fantastic cast. It's sick.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty crazy.
It's
pretty
really
crazy.
Well done.
I was
and
too young when I saw it to appreciate it.
Oh, you
yeah.
got to see it. And again, there's certain little lines and moments that just land so well. And Steve Martin gets his dramatic moments, like that scene where he's trying at the end, where he wants everything to go well at the kids' play, and it's all falling down. It's that roller coaster moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you can see him, and he's living in it. It's a great acting moment, as opposed to, which might have been, it could be a Ron Howard line, or it could just be Steve Martin, when the kid is wearing just the gun belt and the hat.
Right.
And he goes, how about I put this on? Yeah. You know, and you know that was just like, you know what, he probably thought of that, saw the kid, and it was just like, you know what, I was wearing that today, and they stopped me on the way into work, which I don't understand, because I was on my motorcycle, and usually they don't have a problem. You know, you can see him coming up with that bit. You know, it's, and that's another thing. It's like there are certain comedians I think are so good, once you listen to them and become a fan and you can kind of get into their mindset, you can almost come up with your own material and it's just theirs. You know what I mean? Like I could probably at this point come up with a Steve Martin bit in my head that has absolutely nothing that he's ever said.
Right.
Sure.
You know, it's like
or a Bill Murray.
A Bill Murray, right. Perfect. Yeah. Or even like an Eddie Izzard or Stephen Wright, you know? Yeah. I mean, like, those people that have just such great material and just such classic timing.
Yeah. Once you get an idea that sort of hits that same algorithm, you hear it in their voice in your head, you know? Yeah.
No, you can just say it, too. You know? I'm just going, I'll put on the
British
accent.
It would be easy to be that guy.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I wish I were him.
How hard could it be to be Eddie Izzard for a day? You just have to say jam a lot.
But, you know, but that's, you know, again, that's a testimony to two people like Steve Martin who, you know, found out how to get it out there, you know? I mean, again, he was a writer, so you know, who knows where he was? I did you read that little bit about his dad had, like, been in a play with Raymond Massey and he came to, you know, wrote a letter that Massey never responded to get him in. So obviously acting, you know, was this kind of love of his and stuff too that he, you know, be performing. But, you know, if he ends up a writer and then somehow works, it seems like it went from writer to stand up to movies was his path that he took.
Yeah, to art collector.
Yeah, art collector.
Banjo.
Pianist.
Yeah. And what else?
Poet.
He's an archaeologist.
Is he?
Really?
No. Okay. I'm trying to come up with anything that would sound...
Cryptozoologist?
Yeah, see, that's a good one, but no, it's too much. You know?
Too much? Too many syllables?
Full analyst or something like that. he's a linguist and a linguinius.
But you know, this is a guy who just thirsts for knowledge, you know, wants to learn more about, you know, the world and himself and whatever it is. And there's a part of me that really respects this fact that he isn't out there on TMZ.
Right.
And although he's had these personal kind of craziness in his life at times as well, you know, but...
He's kept it mostly under wraps and mostly to himself.
He's a pretty private person, you know?
And that's one thing I wish I knew what psychosis has informed most of his comedy. Because that's one thing I always want
to
know.
To be honest with you, I think it's probably being the sanest one in the room sometimes to put him there. You know what I mean? Like, and again... My relationship, you know, history is not at all perfect or even approaching that. But, he was with Anne Heche for a while, wasn't he?
Oh, God, that's right.
And
he mentions it in
the
book.
Does
he?
Right?
And in fact, and actually she mentions it in her book, which if you want comedy, you got to read. And I don't want to sound horribly mean, but a group out here did like staged readings of her book, almost like it was the vagina monologues. They took it really seriously, and of course, they all looked crazy. But
was it Steve Martin who literally called her a star fucker? I would love that
because she is. Yeah, and I don't know if I mentioned this before, but she must be the smartest person having sex in Hollywood.
Yeah. Right.
She has not made one misstep.
No.
Just, I mean, and that is damn impressive for somebody who doesn't look like they literally climbed off the cover of Maxim.
Yeah. Right.
You know, so good for her. He briefly talks about it, and I kind of love the way he mentions it, because, and again, it was one of the things I loved and hated about the book. I wanted more, but he really just dangled the carrot on the stick out there just a little bit on all the things.
Yeah.
Everything I wanted to hear about, he went, well, then this happened. I'm like, yeah, but I want to hear more about it. Yeah.
It's just a matter that, you know, I am on stage, and it's my ass out here, you know what I mean? And I come out, and I'm giving, and I'm giving, and I'm giving, and I keep giving, and I give some more. And I make a simple request. I say, hey, could I possibly have a blue spot? But I guess the lighting crew feels they know a little bit more about show business than I do. Although I've been in the business a few years, and I think I know what works best. I'm sorry, but I am angry. I come out here, and I can't get a little cooperation from the backstage crew. Excuse me.
sorry, I'm pissed!
What, again, this is 77, Smother Brothers 69.
Yeah.
You know, there's 8 years in there.
Yeah.
Of, I'm sure, bouncing around.
Sure.
You know, and maybe that was the developing of the stand-up act. You know, he's in San Francisco, which is not his home territory, but at that time, sure. and still is, you know, pretty nice hotbed of comedy
sure.
and mm-hmm. stand-up and stuff. So maybe that's where he ended up performing more.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, you know, it's harder to work in your hometown or your home area. You know, easier to go up to San Francisco and say you're from L.A. than be from L.A. and get into probably some of the comedy clubs and stuff. But as like, you know, I would think once you have, I think, did it say he won an Emmy when he was like 23? And
he could have.
I believe
remember.
He won an Emmy when he was 23. And, you know, so my guess is that's about the time he was on the Smothers Brothers.
Yeah, because I think they got one maybe a few post-cancellation Emmys. I can't remember if they got any when they were on there.
But, you know, that's got to get you in the door, you know, any comedy club.
Sure.
You know, I mean.
You would hope so.
I mean, all they had to do was Google, and they would see where he was.
Right, exactly. Right, you know? Exactly. Just going. But he was, like, the first guy, too, to be packing stadiums as a comedian.
Yeah, right. That's a big thing, too.
You know, and it's obviously not just for the writing. It's for seeing this guy on TV. But, I wish I had been around for the time to see, you know, I was just on the periphery. I'm born on the periphery of all this shit. So, like, to see, it's his personality that's sucking these people in.
Right.
It's not just that he's a funny guy.
Yeah.
There's no specific bits except for Excuse Me.
Right.
There's some people expecting maybe he'll do Wild and Crazy Guys on stage on his own somehow.
Yeah, but I mean, that goes right back to my Eddie Murphy thing, which is just like, you know, like, if you want to see that stuff, stay at home and watch it for free.
Yeah.
If you paid to see it, you're a stupid motherfucker.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like, there's something about going to see somebody live that you don't want to see the thing on TV.
Of course.
And I mean, I get it, and we move so much farther away from that sort of vaudeville mentality, whereas like they're coming through, you know, once a year, and I want to see my three bits that I love, and then they can tack on whatever they want, but they better do those three things,
sure.
You know. And that was, you know, and of course it would grow, and you're waiting for it, you know, and it's just so hard because I don't know anybody who's got like those kind of catchphrase things that you wait for,
right?
You know, like
anymore.
I can't wait for that one really good Aziz Ansari bit, you know, or like, I mean, like, and I like him too,
sure,
but
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
again, the comedians aren't like that nowadays.
No,
what do you think? What if Steve Martin, like, let's say for some reason, and being realistic, he's, you're not going to do a live show.
I'd pay
so much
money.
Well, first of all, you would sell tickets now.
Exactly, and it wouldn't cost $4.50.
No.
Like, that's another thing that made me feel like crap. It's like, how much are you guys paying to get in here? $4? $4.50? Oh, sometimes I do a $4.75 show. I'm like, you gotta be shitty.
Yeah,
and you know the people in the front paid $4.50.
Yeah.
Sons of
Can
bitches.
Can you imagine?
You know, that the ticket stub probably costs $450.
Yeah.
The thing that I wonder about is if he decided he wanted to do a show now, you know, I couldn't see him, like, doing a comedy. I mean, it would be an evening with Steve Martin.
Right.
You'd get all of it. You'd get everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. That would be he's going to want to satisfy himself because that's all in person he has to satisfy.
That's
and I don't know if the 20 to 30 minutes that you devote to outside stuff would, you know, it would be, again, at most interesting, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd probably get another half hour of just the most hilarious stuff you'd ever seen.
Yeah.
You know,
or
heard. Or whatever he would decide to do, you know, he's going to paint in front of you or whatever.
Yeah, I just wonder if he's wants to be the George Plimpton of entertainment and just try different areas of that.
Right.
You know, be the most successful he possibly can, and then move on to being a great
major next player. I'm going to learn the zither or whatever.
Yeah,
that is.
Right.
Theremin. Yeah.
I would pay to watch him play theremin on stage.
Okay,
so
I'm going to be honest with you. I love Steve Martin. I'm not going to pay to watch anybody play the theremin. I'm not going to. It's somebody with their hand in the air.
Even
you know?
If it's $4.50.
It doesn't matter. $4.50 for theremin playing? It seems like too much. You know, honestly, for a high-pitched whine, I teach high school. I can get that for nothing.
That's true.
You live with that.
Right, exactly. But no, I this album, it's just got so many things. And other things that you see other comedians coming along to do, you know, just just the way that, you know, he takes something and will completely spin it another direction.
Yeah.
Again, his wordplay, you know, like jokes that I thought were, you know, brilliant, and then, you know, like, I remember the smoking thing. It's like, well, you know, mind if I fart?
Right.
And I was like, actually, you know, after sex, that's when I really like to light one up. You know what I mean? And he
quit
just,
for a year once.
He quit for a year once. I gained a lot of weight. And just, it was brilliant. But, you know, he goes and he does that stuff, and you just, you see him rolling with it. And I remember reading as a kid, again, you know, seeing the influence of this pop up everywhere, being a kid and being like a Bloom County fan on Sunday cartoons. And there was one episode where it's, you know, like the hedgehog and Steve Dallas on one side and Opus is in the middle. And Steve goes, mind if I smoke? And the hedgehog goes, no, mind if I belch pastrami belches in your face?
Right.
And then you see him spewing smoke one way and the other one belching the other way. And, of course, it's both on Opus.
Yeah.
And, of course, he's getting the best of it. But, you know, and I remember thinking that was really, really clever and funny when I was, you know, 12.
Sure.
And then coming back to see this and going, well, this was actually funnier 9 years previous.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
But yeah, it's just there's just so much that goes along with it, and he and again it doesn't stop. And I'd like to know how many shows this album consists of, because this is one of those early albums where you can actually hear it fade out, fade in.
Right, right.
You
that
know,
happens
before,
a lot,
right?
Right
before it gets into that stadium thing, before you're getting into Live in the Sunset Strip, Bill Cosby himself, that one train of thought where maybe there'll be an edit.
Sure.
This one's got them sort of all over the place.
Yeah.
And I would love to know how many shows it was. For all I know, it was one.
Yeah, right.
You know?
And how long a show he was doing.
Right.
And
he
could have
been running.
Got cut out.
Yeah, he could have been running this for 2 weeks, or this could have been one night only. I have no idea.
I know.
You know, the nature of economics, that my guess is it's at best two or three.
Probably.
You know, just. They didn't want to waste tape, you know? I'm making a comedy album, for God's sakes, here.
You know
somebody
how,
was bitching about the cost.
Yeah, and
somewhere,
how many edits
you know,
are they going to do, yeah.
Recording every time, so it's interesting, because when you first brought that up, I thought, oh, it's a bunch of shows, and I thought, oh, no, nobody spends that kind of money, you know, they had to have a sound engineer, and, you know, a few other things going on, that it wasn't just done, so, but there is that weird little kind of in and out going on, where you just kind of, oh, wait, you know, it faded in and out, you know, it's split into three sides, you know, or three cuts in the front, and seven on the back, you know, it feels like there's more.
Right.
You know, it
exactly.
just feels like there's more.
It's like listening to one of Woody Allen's old stand-up things.
Yeah.
You know, like, I have no idea how long this took or how much they took from where.
Right.
But, you know, obviously it was a hell of a night.
You know, I was thinking about this earlier, is that I don't know if it was a result of the era or just a result of who he was, but a lot of what he was doing is fake sincerity, playing off sincerity, but there isn't much that's actually sincere, whereas at the same time, George Carlin was doing, like, he was a big fat hippie, and he was doing a lot of, like, you know what, I am going to take a second to talk. I'm going to make some really good jokes, but I am going to, you know, he didn't take anything seriously too much, but, you know, he gets sincere a couple times. He has some real points.
And even though they both talk about things that are going on, I always thought Carlin was really more of a stand-up philosopher than a comedian, because he can do 20 minutes, and I've just been like, you know, this is great, but I'm not laughing.
Right.
I still love it, don't get me wrong,
right.
But this is just really just, this is how I see the world.
It's not
did you
my
notice
fault,
this?
Loud stuff.
Right, whereas this is just so ridiculous. If you're not giggling, you're not paying attention.
Still $4 to get in? $4? That's not bad, though. You know, $4 in today's world with inflation and all that. It's like nothing. It's like, gee, I got $4. I think I'll throw it out in the street. Oh, I can come in here for $4? Okay. What happens?
But I mean, I don't know if this was a thing, though, at the time, if this was a theme, or if it was just Steve Martin doing that, the fake sincerity thing.
I think it comes from being a brilliant actor and understanding how to set up a good comedic beat.
Right.
And you don't need brilliant material if you can really set the shit out of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can set it up.
Yep.
I mean, again, one of my favorite bits on this, and it's one of those, and for this time, really dark, it gets an amazing reaction. You know, like my girlfriend, you know, that I broke up with, is, you know, she's not alive anymore, you know, and then of course it gets that laugh because you think it's just a bad breakup and she's going to be one of those comedians talking about, well, my girlfriend and I broke up, you know, and it doesn't. It's like, she's dead. It's like, and then he goes into this serious story and he gets the audience and they think, and as an audience member, you think, you know, it's like, well, you know, we're at this party and we had an argument and she started drinking heavily and, you know, I was mad at her and she decided, you know, like, I want to leave. And I was like, you know what, I'm not driving you home. And she asked me to drive her home and I said no. And so we went outside and I shot her. Right. You know, and you think it's going to turn into one of those, I gave her the keys and I should have, you know. Yeah. And you know damn well it's not going there because it's a comedy show. It's not an AA meeting.
Right.
And you go with him the whole way and then he just pulls the rug out. You know, I killed her.
That is
my
favorite joke off the whole album.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. It really is kind of the climax, too.
And it's brilliant. Just
and he's escalating.
Especially because he plays a bit of She's Not Living Anymore in the audience. People think that's funny.
Funny? You know? It's like, that's disgusting. That's not exactly the funny part.
Because they know something funny's coming, and he turns them around and turns it around.
Yeah, and puts it all on them.
That's as close to a joke, you know, as big a joke as he has on this album, too. You know, again, so much his attitude, so much. You know, and it's interesting that, you know, again, we call him an actor. He's acting like a stand-up comedian is what he's doing. Yeah. And he's doing so well. And I think he just understands structures of humor.
Sure.
You know, maybe not even, because they're not jokes. He understands the structure of humor.
And you're absolutely right. And not even just the structure of humor, because he's an entertainer, as you said, Jason, he understands the dynamic of the audience.
Yeah.
He understands what the audience is expecting sitting there watching a stand-up show. And he plays with it.
Yeah.
It's the same thing when he hosts the Academy Awards. Yeah. It's the same thing when he hosts Saturday Night Live. He will stand there and literally he goes, I know you're watching me do this, but hold on a second. I know what it's like to be where you are too.
Yeah.
So let me just say this thing.
You suck!
All right, yes, we've got that out of the way, or whatever
it
is. Yeah. And he can go on. He gets all the performance dynamics because, as you said before, he's not just a stand-up comedian, he's not just an actor, he's an entertainer.
Yeah. But it's brilliant self-awareness, too, because people can do self-aware and it's not, doesn't work. You know what I mean? Self-awareness sometimes just comes across as, like, trying too hard. You know, like, I'm on your side, but there's, I don't know, there is, like you said, he sells it with acting.
Yeah.
He acts the shit out of it. My God.
And again, you know, part of that is being smart, writing great material, having, you know, meticulous and perfect delivery.
Right,
you know,
the timing.
And literally understanding the timing and not even of just the joke then, you know, writing it a week ago, but how do I have to play it literally now in this moment to make it work to the best of its ability?
Mm-hmm.
And he does it. You know, 9 times out of 10, he does it. He listens to the audience and goes with them. It's like Eddie Izzard. It's like Stephen Wright. It's like Mitch Hedberg. It's like any of the greats. They're actually listening to somebody out there do it. You know.
I was just going to ask you guys, in thinking about him as an actor and stuff, what your favorite Steve Martin movies are.
The Jerk's going to be on top. I mean, I love The Three Amigos, even though it's not a Steve Martin movie.
It's a Steve Martin movie. It's just as much a Martin Short or a Chevy Chase movie.
Sure.
You know, but I think it is. There's not a hell of a lot I don't like. You know, Father of the Bride Part 2, I'm not a big fan of. The one with Goldie Hawn in it where she lives in his house.
Oh, God.
Anything with Queen Latifah. You know, but these are givens. These are comedy givens. And as much as I do like Queen Latifah, and to be honest with you, if you can be in a comedy movie with Queen Latifah and she comes out ahead of you, you're doing bad.
Yep.
So Jimmy Fallon, strike one.
Yep.
What else? I mean, like, I love him in The Jerk. Just any movie he's in, where there's one line where you just want to use it in real life.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I don't need you.
Yeah.
I don't need anything.
Except for this
lamp. And it doesn't, and it could be whatever it is. It's just so perfect.
Yeah.
You know, so there's that. And again, Parenthood, you can throw lines out for that.
Yeah.
And every time it's going to be good.
I thought as far as more recent movies go now, Bowfinger is still, I think,
great.
A really solid, funny movie.
I hate myself.
Eddie Murphy's great.
Two of them were fantastic. And to be honest with you, and this is one of the things I wanted to hit on before we wrapped up, I am born and raised in New York City. I knew absolutely nothing about Los Angeles until I came out here. In fact, watching the original opening credits for Futurama, one of the things they threw in there was a billboard of Angeline in the 3000. And I sat there with my brother and we were like, who's that?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, we didn't get any of it. Didn't get any of it. Unless it's the guy with the turban and the, you know, the guitar skating down the pier. Don't get it.
Right.
I don't get it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Steve Martin talks about L.A. culture better than anybody on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
L.A. Story was one of the funniest movies I saw when I was a kid, and it was one of the ones that got funnier and funnier the more I found out about it.
Yeah.
You know, again, I can still use lines from that you know, today, yeah. And it's brilliant. Walk in L.A. You know, like, brilliant. You know, like, and other things, like, and again, Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid. It's yeah. one of my favorite things. Anytime I see somebody asleep, I'm like, let me make you a cup of my famous Java. You know, and I'll take 20 minutes to do right. this. You know, I mean, it's one of the funniest things I've yeah. ever seen in my life. Oh, yeah,
good. I want to see LA Story again.
It's it yeah, is. Me too. It's I have to tell you, it gets better every time you good. See it.
Yeah.
Every time I see it, it adds something, and I go, "Wow, I never picked up on that." Like the mm-hmm. like the valet is laughing at the guy for living in the valley who makes $2 million a year. The valet is laughing at him. You know, it's like, where do you live? Oh, I'm in the valley. The two guys in the red vest. I mean, like, little things like that. You know, like, even Patrick Stewart's cameo as the maitre d' of Lydio, the hot, you know, the hot, you know, it's like, do you have any low-fat dental floss? You know, like, things like that. It's, you know, and he wrote the whole thing. And again, yeah. when he writes it and puts his all into it, even if I don't love the movie, there's still something in it. Like, I like Shop Girl, and I thought the movie was okay. Mm-hmm. But I'll go see it every time, and I still think it's better than it's like a bad Coen Brothers movie. It's going to be better than 9/10 of the crap right. out there anyway. Right, right, doesn't matter how
right,
bad it
right.
is.
It might not match up to their other stuff.
You got it. But it's still better than everything else. Yeah. You got it. You know what I mean? I'd still rather see Lady Killers than Snakes on a Plane or whatever yeah. the hell else. You know, like, and that's not one of my favorites.
So. What's the one? Did he do with Michael Caine where they're the? It was also a
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, again, not a great.
A little bit of that and kind of bailed or something.
Not a great movie. Apparently, the musical did much, much better. Which is yeah. weird. Yeah. But yeah. it does have one of my favorite lines in the whole world, which is, "May I go to the bathroom, please?" "Yes, you may." "Thank you." You know what I mean? And the face he makes, yeah. and it's him getting to be, and he's trying to do a more, you know, more of an acting job. He's got Michael Caine yeah. with him. And he's, yeah. you can see what he's doing it, but he still is able to do what he does really well. And I think he's, and even though I think he's a brilliant actor,
yeah.
no actor can do everything
right.
well.
Yeah.
No actor can do everything well, except for Meryl Streep. Honestly, I think she could have played one of the maids in The Help and done a better job.
But can she play the banjo?
She probably could.
I would watch.
She sings
that.
Pretty
would
well.
You pay to
she
see
does.
That?
She can yeah. sing.
Would you see? Would you pay to see her play the banjo?
I would watch Meryl Streep do almost anything.
What if he's playing the theremin on the stage while she's playing the banjo?
Again, this pain for the theremin thing. And you're pimping it real hard. Do you work for a theremin company? Or
no, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Do you rep
about.
A theremin
no,
player?
No, I can't talk about
all
it.
Right.
I can't.
Be courteous, kind, and forgiving. Be gentle and peaceful each day. Be warm and human and grateful, and have a good thing to say. Be thoughtful and trustful and childlike. Be witty and happy and wise. Be honest and love all your neighbors. Be obsequious, purple, and clairvoyant. Be pompous, obese, and eat cactus. Be dull and boring and omnipresent. Criticize things you don't know about. Be oblong and have your knees removed. Be tasteless, rude, and offensive. Live in a swamp and be three-dimensional. Put a live chicken in your underwear. Get all excited and go to a yawning festival. Okay, everybody.
This album, again, going back over it, it has so many great bits that you can literally say, oh, this is just like a so-and-so, so-and-so, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And it's comedians for the next 20 years.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, and we brought this up with the other discussions, that when you get lines like, excuse me, and mm-hmm. let's get small, that, again, everybody knows.
Sure.
You know, you've set a standard. You've put yourself up there, you know, above so many other people, and
mm-hmm.
you know, made yourself a part of the, you know, lexicon of society, you know, of pop culture, I should say.
Yeah,
maybe
sure.
not society.
Yeah, and again, I have to bring this one out because it's one of my favorite Simpsons lines, but it's the one where Krusty's on the phone mm-hmm. and he's arguing with someone, and his assistant's next to him, and he's on the phone, and he's like, look, my 7 words you can't say on TV bit is totally different from your 7 words you can't say on TV bit. You're gonna sue me, huh? Well, excuse me! Hangs up, turns to his assistant, give him $50,000. Steve Martin online too, $50,000. You know, I mean, and it's like, and again, you can, brilliant writing can reference other brilliant
yeah.
writing
sure.
and still be brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, you can steal from the greats and still be brilliant.
If we're going to close out on anything, it should just be to remind people who are listening to this who have never heard this album that you absolutely have to if you want to understand comedy.
Yeah.
If you want to appreciate comedy, if you want to appreciate absurdity because it really wasn't happening at the time and people were trying to be just stand-ups, they were trying to be cynical, this is the antithesis of cynical. It's making fun of cynical. It's also making fun of stand-up, but it's also celebrating entertaining. You know?
And again, there weren't like absurdist albums either. That's the one thing you want to remember too, that this was so different from what everybody was listening to or seeing at the time. You know?
Yeah, again, the closest thing I could possibly come up with for this at the time is the Firesign Theater,
exactly.
But it did not have nearly the reach to people. You know, again, this was, and you could see how Steve Martin, the Firesign Theater, again, because they were so close to one another, and they had almost all the same influences and coming from the same place at the same time, you can understand where they come from together, but the Firesign Theater is a completely different animal than this. You know, this was meant for the masses, and to go to these big places where Firesign Theater, you got to come find.
You know, it makes me wonder, too, again, some of the things he's doing, I know we're trying to get it right up. I do remember one of his specials, or I can't remember if it was a special or a TV show, and the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band was the musical guest, and they did make a little magic, and there's a little thing at the end where whoever normally sings that song, but he came out and mouthed it, you know, during, and you know, again, he was friends, I think they were members, the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band were also member of the King Tut band, whatever.
That's
that
right. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Stuff,
they played backup for that. I forgot about that.
Yeah, so, again, wondering, what was he doing between 69 and 77, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm guessing opening for, I read somewhere online, some Nitty Gritty Dirt Band comes up, but there were a couple other big name before concerts. Instead of having a band, opening band, they would have a comedian.
He used
stuff,
to go hang out and play before Linda Ronstadt
and all these
other people.
Right.
Sure, yeah. I mean, you know.
And if you're not fantastic, you know, that could be one of the worst gigs in the world. Because if people are coming to hear music, all of a sudden here comes a comedian, it's just like,
shut up!
You gotta be fucking fine! You know, you get so heckled, and you've gotta be fantastic. You can see where, he had to be able to grab an audience, and I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody bombs, but you see how he developed this sense of, you have to watch me kind of attitude.
Right.
And to be honest with you, this is one of the things that just sort of popped in my head as you were saying that. It's like, and goes along with you're saying, if you love comedy and you want to, and especially if you're a fan now, if you're a Zach Galifianakis fan, you have got to listen to this album.
Yeah.
Because it is the same fucking thing.
Sure.
Zach's a little bit more polished and cool now, but if you go back to when he was first busting out that piano on stage, same thing.
Yep.
You know, and I mean, you can go back. Robert Wool was doing the same types of bits. I mean, people have been stealing for this and coming back to it over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And it's, again, it's just, it's brilliant. Steve Martin, brilliant guy, been living in LA for over 10 years, still never met him or worked with him. Steve, if you're out there,
call
me.
Call?
Please.
Yeah.
Right. Call and I will come.
You'll just hang too. It's not just to work, right?
No, I'll shoot the shit. We can talk about, you know,
I'm your
art.
Biggest fan.
Exactly. I mean, I teach at the High School for the Arts, and I made one of my visual students put me in a Munch painting. I also believe I'm Venus on the Half Shell at one point. It's frightening. It's an actually beautiful painting.
I need to see this.
It's absolutely frightening.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I'm in The Scream. It's great. Oscar the Grouch is on. Yeah, Oscar the Grouch is on the bridge in the back.
Nice.
It's wonderful. But yeah, no, and to see what he's become, you know, he really, and I envy him so much because he could have just become this thing and been doing this his entire career, but he really let his passions and what he loves and wants to do drive him. You know, and that's the music, that's the art.
Another true
Renaissance
man of our age.
And it's, I don't think we're going to get many of these.
Right.
You know, because even the young people now, you know, young stars now are trying to make music or write.
Mm-hmm.
They're largely awful outings.
Of course, yeah.
And I do think, again, it's such a difficult thing to do, besides if you want to do it, to try to convince others in your camp that, hey, I'm going to paint now.
Right.
You know, your manager, Andrew, wait, they can't make any money off of that,
right.
So they don't want you to do that. You know, you're not going to get any encouragement either, so.
Or
you have to be big enough, as he is.
Yeah, or it's not the other side where there's just yes men and everything you do is going to be brilliant.
Right.
You know, it's like, yes, definitely do that.
That's true, too. Yeah.
Right. So.
Yes, Miley Cyrus, he should be directing.
Yeah, oh, yes, please, you should. Yeah, oh, he's so Spielberg, he's crap. You should be doing it, man.
Yeah. We're in an age when people can very easily pretend for a few minutes that they're very talented, get somewhere with it, and then they're not going to go anywhere else with it. Whereas Steve Martin could do 10,000 different things, but he still picks one of them to do at a time.
Yeah.
You know,
You know, and two things that were never up for discussion was he could write and he could perform his writing. Right. You know, and that, and if you got those two things, it's a hell of a springboard.
Yeah, absolutely.
But listen to Let's Get Small and Get Small.
Yes.
When you do it, I highly recommend it.
Oh, and another thing I love about it is he did, and I love anybody at that time who's dissing drug culture.
Yes.
I love that. Yeah. I love that he's not buying into it, and he's like, he does a little bit of drug bits, but his is getting small. You know, like,
you can get into the balloon, you're coming with me.
You know what I mean? And then when he talks about, like, dope and everything else, I think those people should be taken out and maimed. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, that's an awkward stance to have in 1977.
Yes.
But, you know, man, good for him.
Agreed.
But anyway.
Well, everybody, thank you so much. We would we'll talk more about some other album next. And thank you, Jeremy.
My pleasure. I am a huge Steve Martin fan, so this was a lot of fun.
I'll pick up another one. We'll go over it, even though this is the one. This is the one that everybody loves.
We'll find more.
Yeah. What would be the worst or most obscure thing to talk about that he's done?
I'll find a soundtrack to one of his really bad films.
Oh, really? Because I was trying to come up with, like, what would the worst movie be? And I mentioned one with Goldie Hawn and the Queen Latifah one, so I think
I'd
kind of let the cat out of the bag.
Well, we'll do some hunting. But thank you, Mike, also.
My pleasure. Always fun.
And, thank you very much for listening to Comedy on Vinyl, and we'll catch you next week.
Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit stolendress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on facebook.com/comedyonvinyl, Twitter @comedyonvinyl, and find everything else at comedyonvinyl.com. A major portion of Comedy on Vinyl has been underwritten by Stand Up Records. Please visit standuprecords.com for all your comedy needs and tune into the new Stand Up channel available on the Roku, where you can also find select episodes of this podcast.
Oh, hi. I'm Jason Klom.
Gazizza. I'm Alan Rickard.
Your last name is Rickard?
And we are the hosts of
Dispatches from Port Awesome, a news radio podcast.
This is Jason again. I host the well-reputed...
Reputed. This is Alan.
Reputed Comedy on Vinyl podcast, as well as some others. Alan, though.
I've been on some podcasts, also I'm an actor, and have been for nigh on several years.
The important part, though, is that while we're close friends, we found a bond when we discovered that we both loved the greatest sitcom of the 90s.
Possibly of all time.
I won't refute that. The podcast will go through the entire series, from episode 1 to episode 97.
We'll be talking with other fans of the show, people who worked on the show, and you.
That's right. You can email your questions about the show, and I'm not kidding here, to freakzilla@scopenet.com. That's right. We'll either try to get the answers for you ourselves or direct from the people who put the show together.
It's a dream come true. You can also call and leave a voicemail for us at 646-801-WNYX. If it's relevant or funny or even stupid, as long as it's news radio related, you have a good chance of it getting played on the show. Dispatches from Fort Awesome, a news radio podcast.
All of this talk of aged lunch meeting ghosts has made me peckish.
Equally dumb closing quote.
God damn it, Alan.
Sorry.
Please subscribe to Dispatches from Fort Awesome on iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, and write us a review. It helps. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WNYX News Radio.